You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Week 8 is here. Josh is on the road upstate New York with the fiance. I'm at home doing the work. Lord Reeves, we know, is doing the work. Rich Rebar of Sharp Football. We're going to do about 30 minutes of just people we like. It's that simple. We're not going to talk about the players we don't like. It's just 10 players that we like, must starts. This is definitely going to be a little bit more DFS-y, a little more player proppy than normal here because Rich Rebar has all the stats. So I'll just kick it over to you. Favorite play of week 8.
You have all the stats too. You got all the charts, or what you?
Yeah, I'm a charts guy. I'm not a stats guy. I'm just here for the visuals.
I don't know rhyme or reason if there's an order to these guys, but since you said nope. Like best play, I mean, if we're gonna say like what I believe is the best play, the most optimal guy this week, I mean, we got to start with the big dog, right? Derrick Henry. He's been hot. You know, he's had, what, over 132 total yards in each of the past four games. He's 25 or more touches in all those games. He has multiple receptions in all those games. Like,
that's the new part.
What? Yeah. Like, you know, we can't get any catches for Dalvin Cook, but Derrick Henry's out here catching multiple passes every week. And on top of it all, he's going against the fantasy god's gift to all opposing running backs, the Houston Texans. They're allowing 5.2 yards per carry to opposing running backs. And when you pair that with they face the most carries per game from opposing running backs, it's just quite the cocktail, which is why they are, you know, allowing the most rushing points per game in the NFL to opposing running backs. Through six games, the Texans have allowed either the highest scoring running back or the RB2 that week four times.
Wow.
And on top, and there's a nice little cherry on top of it all. Derrick Henry has over 200 rushing yards in three straight games against the Texans, which doesn't matter for this. Like, it's not like what he did 3 years ago matters, but it's just fun to say as content creators. And then you're getting this run out with the Titans. They run the ball on 67% of their first down plays. That's second in league, only Atlanta. Our boy Arthur Smith is doing it more. Who he came from. You know, Arthur Smith came from Tennessee. And Houston's allowing 5.9 yards per carry on opponent first down runs, which is last in the league. So it's got to start with the big dog. He set the table set for him this week.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that the Texans, like, not only are they, when they're losing, teams obviously are going to be running on them, but even in neutral situations, offenses facing the Texans are running the ball in neutral situations at the sixth highest rate. So you have to dare the Titans to have a good time on the ground. The offensive line stuff hasn't been as bad as I thought it was going to be, given some of their injuries in Tennessee. And on the flip side, the Texans, they just lost one of their best defensive linemen just the other week too. So huge Derrick Henry week. Is he going to be like the RB1? I think I have him like the RB3. It's like Josh Jacobs kind of in that tier. I want to hear Pollard.
Did you hear Josh Jacobs after the Texans game last week?
No, what he said.
Where he had a quote, he was like, there was just times I thought like someone was going to be around me going to the line of scrimmage and I would just run for four or five yards. Like, he was like, I was just running for 4 or 5 yards and there was no one around me.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those weeks. Like, I'm going to see what we have him in our pick'em projections. I'm sure the rushing total is like around like 120 or something like that. It's 101.5 rushing yards is our higher lower. 18.95 higher low for half PPR points. And then the receiving yards total is the interesting part, because that's been that's been like the new stuff this year versus the previous seasons. He's not quite as explosive as he once was. The team definitely isn't scoring as many touchdowns as they once were, but he is getting there in the receiving game. So that's the new stuff. Just curious on your opinions of Tony Pollard, obviously he goes to the moon, but like how much to the moon? Because like for DFS circles, I'm sure like the ownership rates and all that stuff is going to be at sky high. How do you think he like matches up with somebody like Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I mean, we live in a salary cap world, and you know, Derrick Henry is 10K on FanDuel and he's 8-2 on DraftKings, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're in the salary cap world, getting Tony Pollard at, you know, 6,200 right. and 6,500 is a huge run out. We only obviously have that one game sample of Tony Pollard playing without Ezekiel Elliott, and he was the RB1 that week with Andy Dalton as his quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the Bears have been so bad against the run. I mean, it's a perfect run out, right, if Tony Pollard gets this job, because one, they haven't even had a third running back active yet this season. It's just been Zeke and Tony Pollard every game. So, like, whoever they bring up from the practice squad, whether it's Quadri Olison or I forget the young guy's name that they had in the preseason that was running the ball actually pretty well in the preseason. But, like, these guys we can't count on to get touches. We're also getting the Bears traveling on a short week. They just played on Monday night. And the Bears have been awful against the run, too. So it's just, like, set up so perfectly for Tony Pollard, like, such a smash spot. For like this to all run out for him. He's going to have a lot more ownership just based on salary than Derrick Henry mm-hmm. just by default. But he's like good chalk. Like there's no real reason to fade right. Tony Pollard.
Yeah, totally agree. For Battle Royale right now, Tony Pollard's ADP is much lower. We haven't like fully adjusted yet, at least. There's like some chance that Zeke Elliott plays, but with the bye week I think they have next week, I'm pretty certain that he's going to be sitting. So Tony Pollard's one of the best picks in Battle Royale for sure. He was probably not getting drafted earlier in the week, so he's probably not going to be at least 100% rostered. Okay, for my first player, it's going to be Tyler Boyd. And my question to you just like, how high should he be in my rankings? I currently have him as the wide receiver 17, kind of sandwiched between Ooh. Gabe Davis and Amari Cooper. Obviously, Ja'Marr Chase goes out. The team total drops by 1.25 points. They're still ninth highest in the league this week, the Bengals are. And it's just kind of a debate is what they were doing the last couple weeks, shotgun-based, completely pass-heavy, first and neutral pass rate, 78%, I think was the highest of any team this entire year last week. And that's been feeding the ball to Tyler Boyd specifically. When they go shotgun and they're reading the field out, one of the first things he's going to be looking at is, do I have a free 6, 7, 8 yards to Tyler Boyd in the slot? And we saw that a lot last week. We know Mike Thomas is not going to be a target earner. His yards per route run over his career is under 1.0. Everything's setting up for Tyler Boyd to be a upside wide receiver two play, assuming the Bengals stick with this pass heavy offense. What do you think they're going to do without Ja'Marr Chase?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, since the start of last year, he has not been on the field for only 21 of Joe Burrow's pass attempts. Like, we don't really have like a sample and a bunch of splits to draw from. Right.
Right.
And then the other interesting dynamic in this game is that you would think like, the way to beat the Browns is to go beat them up because their defensive interior is so light and they can't stop the run. They're just getting bullied around. But the Bengals' under center game is awful, and they can't really line up and run the football, like straight run the football on anybody. So, yeah, it's going to be a real interesting dynamic here to see how the Bengals are able to calibrate, because they just found it, right? Like, we just found this. Like, hey, you messed around for 5 weeks trying to figure out how you wanted to get teams to combat the too high safety stuff you were looking at. You finally realized your under center game was trash. You scrapped it, started playing the Joe Burrow offense, and guess what? You started moving the football a lot. Now, granted, they did face two defenses that were pretty banged up the past 2 weeks. But still, like, we've been screaming for, like, Zach Taylor just to do this. Like, hey, you can't line up and just run the football on early downs. You're not having any success with it. Get rid of it. But that would be the signal here, is to do that against the Browns, especially without Ja'Marr Chase. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, how the Bengals, go into this game on Monday night. But, yeah, both those receivers get a big bump. Like, so we don't really have, like, a large sample. We can kind of use Higgins as a proxy, in a sense, because – Higgins has missed a lot of time the past 2 years, like when all these guys have been around. So if we kind of just use him as like a proxy, you know, Chase's targets and targets per out run bumped way up with Higgins off the field. And the same thing was true for Tyler Boyd. I imagine we'll see a similar run out, because as good as the top three wide receivers are for the Bengals, wide receivers 4 through 6 might be the worst in the NFL.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It's rough down here. Stanley Morgan is like a run blocker. Mike Thomas has been out here for a while, not really doing anything. Hayden Hurst isn't exactly like a guy we're going to count on to like really turn like a bunch of like production, like electric production, right? Like, he can get some more targets, but
yeah,
What do we get?
I got to stop you there. More targets at the tight end position this week. I will gladly be taking. I have Hayden Hurst well inside my top 10 this week just because I'm looking at guys like, you know, Kyle Pitts, Taysom Hill, people that project for zero targets per game inside my top 10, top 12. So I
moved Hayden Hurst. And Taysom Hill in there?
I mean, my goodness. But yeah, so I think Hayden Hurst is a primary beneficiary here. Obviously, T. Higgins, we're all going to be ranking him inside the top 10. And I have a pretty aggressive ranking on Tyler Boyd just because I don't think they can fully put the genie back in the bottle after switching this offense. It's been more effective. It seems like Joe Mixon likes it more. Joe Burrow, certainly going back to even college, loves the shotgun offense. I just think it's better when he can actually see the field. When they do the play action stuff, I know it's more efficient historically and stuff, but Joe Burrow is so good with just like reading the coverage immediately and just getting the ball out. And I think that they can do that still. They're calling T. Higgins an alpha number one receiver. I think that he can do that as well. So very bullish on Tyler Boyd. All right, who's your next name?
I like that. Well, this is the must start theme. So we've got a must start Raheem Mostert.
I have him too. Let's go. He's one of my five.
Yeah, you look at Raheem Mostert, just last week on Sunday night, still retained like his grasp on this Miami backfield. You know, he's gone over 100 yards in two of the past three games. 74% of the backfield touches on Sunday night. He also ran a passer out on 71% of team dropbacks. That was his highest rate in a game this season. And we're getting that kind of gift against the Lions, like we kind of talk about the Texans. I mean, they're 30th in yards per carry allowed to running backs. They've allowed 10 touchdowns to running backs so far. 44% of the carries against the Lions have gained 5 or more yards. That's 30th in the league. 17% have gone for 10 or more yards. That's 31st in the league. He's another guy, too. He's just getting a couple more receptions a game, too, than we thought like he might get in this split because Chase Edmonds has been bad, unfortunately. I love this game again. There's going to be another player in this game I'll talk about, too, because I think the Lions are just structurally, like, this is a nightmare matchup for them, no matter what way you slice it, to how to defend the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
Like, this is one of the worst teams they, for the structure of defense they play, can try to stop. Raheem Mostert, you got to fire him up. I think he's a legit RB1 this week.
I have him ranked as my RB11. If I was going to pick a direction to move him to, I think I'd move him up. Yeah, the Dolphins are projected for the second most points of the week, and Raheem Mostert's just been good. And Chase Edmonds, like you said, has been really bad this season. So he had two drops even last week. And I noticed this early in the season, like Raheem Mostert was playing like the 2-minute drill. And that, like, I was not expecting that at all. And then, like, kind of since then, he's just been getting a couple more targets here and there, not really groundbreaking stuff, but we don't even need that many targets in this game just because the Miami Dolphins playing the Lions 31st in against fantasy running backs, 31st in rushing EPA allowed here. And the Lions, I think, can fight back on offense when Jared Goff has most of his weapons back. Amon-Ra St. Brown seems like he's going to be cleared to go. And DeAndre Swift fully practicing. Are either one of those names your other name in this game?
No, it's another Dolphin.
Hit me. Let's do it.
Might as well stay there. And it's Tyreek Hill. I promise I have some less like.
We need to know who to draft in the first round of Battle Royales and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, just this marriage of Mike McDaniel and Tyreek Hill has just been so perfect. I mean, the next gen, the gummy worm charts that people tweet out, he's just lining up everywhere. They're just funneling him targets everywhere. He's got 31% of the team targets. That's fourth among all wide receivers. He's been targeting 34% of his routes. That leads all receivers, in yards per route run. The other thing we love about Tyreek Hill is he leads the NFL in targets and team target share with the use of play action, which are historically worth more fantasy points. What I like for him particularly about this matchup is the way the Lions play defense, and they're going to have to try to figure out what they're going to do because they can't do what they always do. Detroit has blitzed on 35% of opposing passing plays. That's fifth in the NFL. They played man coverage on 44% of opposing passing plays. That's second. When they blitz, they play man coverage behind the blitz on 61% of those blitzes, which is the ninth highest rate in the league. Teams do not often try to blitz the Miami Dolphins because their guys are faster than everybody. Yep. But when they do, Tyreek Hill is averaging 4.1 yards per route run against the blitz. He's been targeted on 37% of his routes against the blitz. That's the fourth highest rate in the NFL. So if Detroit does want a cookie jar a few times and stick their hand in there, on the carpet, yeah, Tyreek might be blowing by some big touchdowns. And his splits versus the blitz and zone coverage and man coverage stuff are a little bit better than Waddle's. Waddle's been a little bit more of a zone-based guy. Mm-hmm. But Waddle is playable, too, this game, too. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah, I'm looking for, like, a pretty big run out for Tyreek here.
Yeah, I think for Battle Royale, Tyreek Hill's going after Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp. And I think you can make a pretty good argument that he should be the wide receiver one. That's where I have him in my rankings. Jalen Waddle also in the top 10 for Battle Royale this week. Yeah, I'm with you. The only concern you can possibly have is this bracket coverage that they did against Justin Jefferson. But they've done that basically once. Mm-hmm. And the way that they use Tyreek Hill, even if you are bracketing, they just throw him screens and all that type of stuff as well, that he's pretty much just bracket proof for the most part. And even Justin Jefferson later in the game was getting some manufactured stuff in that game. So yeah, no downside risk for Tyreek Hill, any of these Dolphins. I think that two of double stacks in DFS circles, definitely viable. My next name, speaking of that, is Kirk Cousins. So we're looking for QB1s, low-end QB1s. We have Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert. They're both on buys. The Vikings right now have the fourth highest team total of the week. Kirk Cousins, we don't have to worry about prime time. In fact, this is probably one of the most hidden games of his career. Middle of the season, coming off the bye, one Eastern at home, all the things that you can possibly like. The Cardinals on defense, they've been struggling. They're 27th against fantasy quarterbacks. They're 30th in adjusted sack rate. They're 27th in passing EPA per allowed. And offenses facing the Cardinals have pass and neutral situations at the eighth highest rate. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen with this offense. My theory is that these first-time head coaches, they get better throughout the season. They have to learn some things. We'll see if the same is true for Nathaniel Hackett. But I'm pretty bullish on what the Vikings can do on offense. Their offensive line, per a lot of these metrics, have been improved this year versus the last couple seasons. So they play with pace. They play with pass rate. They're both top 10 in those neutral stats as well. So I think Kirk Cousins, especially in like DFS, I think you can get Justin Jefferson and maybe throw in an Irv Smith because tight end's down, or throw in Adam Thielen, whose usage is still wide receiver three level. He hasn't been as productive this year, but I think that this is a matchup to kind of take advantage.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Vikings if they start incorporating some more intermediate, the vertical passing in their offense, you know, coming out of the bye. That's like the only thing Kevin O'Connell hasn't really brought over. They're throwing more on first down. They're doing all these structured things that we kind of thought that they would improve the passing game. Because remember, the big argument wasn't that the Vikings were going to just throw more with Kevin O'Connell. Like the attempts were fine last year. It was how efficient the types of throws they were going to get, throwing on early downs, putting Kirk Cousins in more advantageous situations. That's where the boon was going to come from. It wasn't really a volume perspective thing. This game could be fun. It could get there. You know, if the Cardinals are going to carry over what they did on Thursday night, this is another one of those like could be fun games as well. So yeah, I'm just looking for some more deep balls because only Daniel Jones has thrown the ball downfield less than Kirk Cousins. And even when you factor in their intermediate levels where Justin Jefferson was such an assassin the past 2 years, everything for Kirk Cousins, 72% of his passes, 10 yards line of scrimmage or shorter, one of the highest rates of the league. Let's get some of these crossers going, right, that we saw in week one, like where we had Justin Jefferson running butt naked, you know, over the middle of the field. Let's get some of those back in play.
Yeah, totally agree with that. We have seen the Vikings tick up their neutral pass rate recently over the last 4 weeks. Of the season as well. And this is just a great matchup for Justin Jefferson in particular. I do think that the Cardinals, you made a good note there. I'm curious if there's going to be some splits with like neutral pace. Like the Cardinals neutral pace has been down a little bit. Now they still play at high pace when they're trailing in games. But early in the season, I was kind of frustrated, but they were playing a little bit slower. And I wonder if just getting DeAndre Hopkins back just gives them a sense of relief. I don't think that like DeAndre Hopkins is much better or worse than like Marquise Brown, but I just wonder if the new offense, they've been moving things around. I wonder if Cliff gets back in his bag and this game could have more plays than we're anticipating, just because we've seen there's at least some excuses to kind of make some tweaks for both of these offenses.
They also on last Thursday night used motion on 65% of their snaps, which they hadn't been doing at the front of the season either. So I don't know what it took. Just DeAndre Hopkins came back, started to give Cliff some religion. Like, I don't know. They were moving Hopkins around the line at formation instead of just like lining up as just like that left wide receiver. Like,
I'm hoping that Cliff like created a burner account on Twitter and started like following all the fantasy analysts. And like, all right, let's see what they have I'm sure that there's some coaches out there that are secretly into the deep Twitter stuff. Following
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be great.
I saw someone ask Todd Bowles about EPA per play last week.
It did not go well for that reporter.
Or was it left? It was Leftwich, right?
Leftwich. Yeah.
And he had no idea even what EPA. He thought it was someone was speaking in tongue.
Yeah, he shut it down. He's like, what's wrong with our run game? We're like, have you watched it? The film isn't much different than the EPA metric either.
True.
I don't know where you're going with that. Okay, we're about halfway through this. Who's your next name?
All right, I'll pick a guy a little bit down on the charts. I'm going to go with Wandale Robinson.
Okay.
We saw him last week again. He comebacks, get another eight targets, just the 50 yards. He's probably not going to be like a huge yardage guy for you. Probably one of those guys that is like Tyler Boyd-ish before, right, before the bump. But after he played 23 snaps in week 6, he gets up to 69% last week, goes from 36% route participation rate up to 78%. He's been targeted on 36 and 24% of his routes. What we like about him in this particular matchup is he plays 71% of his snaps in the slot so far. Seattle's been very good on the outside. They've been really bad against everybody except for like boundary wide receivers. Mm-hmm. But they're fourth in the league in points allowed to opposing boundary wide receivers. Those Giants don't really have anybody. Like Darius Slayton's been playing okay, but they don't really have any boundary receivers for like us to care about. But on the interior, Seattle, 23rd in points allowed per game, 8.7 yards per target, that's 23rd, 13.8 yards per catch, that's 29th. They've also allowed 3 touchdowns to those guys too. It seems like Wandale early on is like he has a role when he's on the field. His snaps have been valuable. So I like him for this matchup in a game where like both running backs look absolutely sensational. Maybe we'll talk about some of those guys too.
Yeah, the Wandale Robinson stuff, it's a good point. That Seattle, I think most of that production on defense is just Tariq Woolen, their 6'4", absolute freak athlete, has just been shutting everyone down on the perimeter, and they've lost some pieces on the inside. So that's not super surprising that their slot rates haven't been as strong as their deep stuff. Yeah, Wandale Robinson's super interesting. I have been kind of holding back too much optimism, like half PPR and stuff, just because my fear is that he's like a slot receiver only, though he was playing more two wide receiver sets last week, and that his ADOT's going to be low. I believe it's only at 5 yards. But in a game with Geno Smith gets hot, all of a sudden we can see Wandale Robinson, which we haven't seen because the Giants have been miraculously winning all these games, in negative game scripts. And I think that's really when some of these slot receivers can go off. We've seen like something like crazy, like Jamison Crowder weeks where there's like no other outside wide receivers to throw the ball to. They're losing by a touchdown or two, and all of a sudden like Jamison Crowder gets 11 targets. I kind of see Jamison Crowder and Wandale Robinson in pretty similar roles here. So I have him as like a wide receiver 3. You can play a upside wide receiver 3 in full PPR. We just need the Giants to lose a couple games, which doesn't seem like it's ever going to happen.
Yeah, they're just riding this magical run, man. And so is Seattle. This is the only game this weekend where both teams have a winning record. And who would have thought that, where we had Ravens, Bucks, 49ers, Rams, Bills, Packers. Like, this is the only game.
Yep. Just while we're talking about it, do you have like any like thoughts on how the ball is going to get distributed with DK Metcalf most likely out this weekend? Perhaps behind, like, obviously, like, you move Tyler Lockett up. Like, is Noah Fant somebody that you even care about at this point? He's pretty much been useless. Do you think like Ken Walker all of a sudden gets an extra couple catches per game? How do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you look at just, it was only the one game split last week, but, Lockett's, routes per target went from 22% with Metcalf on the field all the way up to 35% with him off. So obviously he's going to draw the targets because he's just inherently going to draw targets because he's good and the other guys aren't as good. Marquise Goodwin will be an interesting play. The Giants are another one of those teams. They've been better outside than inside. They blitz a lot. We know that they're going to give up a chance. Like I said, they're going to stick their hand in the cookie jar. Wink is going to send some guys.
Oh, yeah.
And Geno's been awesome against the blitz the whole year. So his splits versus the blitz, I think it gives a chance for any of these guys to make plays. Probably Marquise Goodwin. You won't get the 2 touchdowns, but there's opportunity there. The tight ends are cannibalizing each other. It's a lot like the Colts situation where Seahawk team tight end looks pretty good, like in the context of like their stats.
Yeah.
But like they're playing Will Disley, they're playing Noah Fant, they're playing Colby Parkinson. If we could just combine those guys into one Voltron, like one tight end Voltron, I'd feel really good. But like the fact that all these guys are cannibalizing each other and they all kind of have different roles. Like Disley's a run blocker, but he also draws the red zone looks.
Right.
So Fant's getting like all these like just targets that like don't really have any, they're not rich in any fantasy cholesterol. Like they just aren't they're just targets.
I guess you could make the case that maybe that they go to two more or more two wide receiver sets and put Noah Fant maybe as like a slot guy. We were asking the Broncos to actually do that more, and he really actually didn't do that all that much for like how strong of a prospect profile he had. That's kind of the upside case, I guess, as a punt play in DFS. I'm sure that he's going to be.
Yeah, he's right in that popular mix.
Yeah. Next name I have is DJ Moore, and it's pretty funny. You and I both posted like on off splits with DJ Moore within like a minute of each other. I posted mine, I refreshed, and like the next tweet is just your on off splits. I was like, yes, we're on the same page here. But in short, without Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore has seen about like 3 expected fantasy points per game more without him. Over the last month of the season, he's quietly been the wide receiver 19 in expected half PPR points per my model. I was pretty optimistic with what PJ Walker did last week. Now we'll see if that obviously stays, but the Falcons defense right now is completely trash. No AJ Terrell. They're probably going to have a safety out as well. They're already dead last against fantasy wide receivers. It's a week to start DJ Moore. I'm pretty confident in this because the usage is up, and if this game stays close or if the Panthers trail at all, I think that DJ Moore is like the only one that's going to be quote unquote earning targets. I don't think that Terrace Marshall, the tight ends, nobody else, even Chuba Hubbard, who was kind of operating as their passing down back, if you had to pick one, he's not going to be playing this week too. So I think that DJ Moore, I think I'd be pretty stunned if he didn't have like top 20 like targets this week.
You're not chasing that Tommy Tremble touchdown?
Man, I wish. I thought Tommy Tremble had a little something on paper, but he can't get the full-time role.
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually – this is one I kind of regret, just not being ahead of a week ago, right? Like, when we last saw the Panthers the week prior, you know, their longest completion was 6 yards downfield. The
ADOT was negative. That was, like, my favorite set of the year is they had a negative ADOT with P.J. Walker.
We just kind of left everything for dead there, but it was like during the week they traded away Robbie Anderson and Christian McCaffrey. Like,
yeah,
it was kind of like, it was one of these things that was like, it was in front of my face, and like, I'm in the weeds on this stuff. I'm looking like, why didn't I pull up those splits before?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't I have those? Like, why am I tweeting him a week late? Like, he was 4,900 on DraftKings last week.
Dang.
Like, and he's only 5,300 this week. So, like, it's fine still. Because his splits with Robbie Anderson are amazing, too. He's only run 154 routes with both off the field. I mean, that's at least something. It's better than our Jamar Chase splits that we brought about earlier. But, yeah, I mean, 32% team target share or target per out run with those two guys off the field. You talk about they just don't have anybody else.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with this particular matchup where 2 weeks ago, Casey Hayward had already been put on IR. No AJ Terrell. The past 2 weeks, the Falcons have allowed 5 top 24 scoring receivers. So yeah, the runway is here for Denniston Jr. for sure. I'm just mad that I'm a week late on it.
Yeah, I was calling him a buy low, but I wasn't like standing on the table and stuff, because a lot of the times we get frustrated, we get too zoomed in, and I'm guilty of this too. We got to sometimes take a step back and be like, all right, talent's going to win out some degree. Mm-hmm. The Panthers can't have outlier levels of play volume stuff the entire season. And I know it's been frustrating. I almost want to say the same things about Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Like, it can't be this bad the entire season, or else this is like legit like 1950s football. You'd have to assume that this kind of regresses to some degree here. I'm going to have to eat my words with this one too. I did not include Kyle Pitts because I'm too much of a coward. I almost called Kyle Pitts somebody to be buying this week, but I just couldn't do it. Do you have another name?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is we were just talking about, because I have a main event team and we were debating whether to play Drake London or Antonio Gibson this week. Do you have a take on that?
I think I would go Drake London. Antonio Gibson was getting a couple more passing down reps, and I mean, the coach.
But that's where we are with London.
I know it's not great. It's not great because I think I have Brian Robinson as like my RB27, and I have him ranked ahead of Antonio Gibson, of course. So I stuck with it. I asked Josh. I said, I think Drake London is my wide receiver 34 this week. And I asked him, I was like, is that too high or too low? He said that's too high. But I told him I'm betting on talent here. I've seen him play. He's good.
Yeah, I have him at 36. So like, it's so hard because you said the same thing. Like, when you get into like the weeds, when you're actually ranking these guys, and you have to put the numbers, you have to put them in
That's
a linear
what I said.
List. We have to put them in like a linear order. Like, how am I supposed to put like Donovan Peoples-Jones ahead of Drake London? Like, you know, or like even like Chase Claypool, right? Like,
yes,
man. Like, I'm not excited. I don't want to play Chase Claypool either.
No, like, I can't do it. I can't do it. I've had enough. I don't think that he can look this team in the eyes, down three scores again, and say we're running the ball again. And there's a chance that even Caleb Hundler, somebody misses time here too. So
Yeah. I mean, they haven't had more than 20 team targets available since week two.
Gosh, it's so frustrating, man. So, and Kyle Pitts, he got absolutely stonewalled at the goal line last week. He had that holding call the play before, and it was like he literally ran into an invisible stone wall at the goal line. It was so frustrating.
They called it a touchdown at first, and then they changed it.
The Julio
and then
they Kirk's.
Tried to challenge it, and that was one of those plays that had no shot at getting overturned because it was just like
this is
right on the line.
Look at this.
Yeah.
Okay, who's the next name?
Yeah, I got another guy. I don't see any reason to slow down the Kenneth Walker train.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you look at just – it's particularly in this matchup too. So right now he has 23 touches in each game in the past 2 weeks, 92% and 74% of team backfield touches. The one bugaboo is he does – you know, he doesn't have a catch after 2 weeks. You know, as a guy, you know, that's like a one slice of complaint. He's not running like a ton of routes, but maybe makes him like a – like almost like a Nick Chubbian type of like run out for fantasy. But we're getting him as a home favorite here. They haven't played in a negative game script. I don't think even if the Giants go ahead, it's like a real negative game script either.
Right.
Like, I don't think the Giants are put them in a spot where we have a drop back passing game for 2.5 quarters. Also, Kenneth Walker now is up to 318 rushing yards on carries of 10 or more yards. Only Nick Chubb and Saquon Barkley have more as running backs. Those guys have 59 and 76 more carries than Kenneth Walker as well. He is what he was advertised as college, right? Like, this is who he was coming out of college. He is that very Jonathan Taylor-esque type of, like, you might stop him for 5 or 6 runs, but guess what's going to happen on that 7th run? Like, you might get house called. And then you look at the Giants, they're 31st in the NFL in yardage allowed rushing on explosive runs in the NFL. The past 2 weeks, they've allowed 119 yards to Kenyon Drake on just 10 carries, and they allowed 114 yards to Travis Etienne on just 14 carries. Like, what happens if we throw a 20-carry running back at these guys? Like, you know, we could be looking at a really big number in terms of yardage and big runouts. Inversely, Seattle also terrible and explosive run rate allowed, and we already mentioned Saquon a second in those types of yardage. Like, this game could have some house calls for some running backs.
Yeah, I'd love to see it right now. Ken Walker in the Pick'em lobby, higher lower set at just over 16 half PPR points. That seems completely appropriate to me. He's just amazing, man. He really is. And I do think that he can catch more passes than people give him credit for. We kind of seen players or running backs coming out of that conference, especially Michigan State as well. They just don't throw the ball to their running backs. And like, if you read all the scouting reports, like Daniel Jeremiah said, like, he's like one of the best interviews, like the coaches love him, all that stuff. I feel like just betting on these players, like, that he's going to eventually be able to catch some passes here too. So we'll see if they drop a couple more screens just in case, like, there's a little dip in efficiency. Sometimes you see coaches dial up a couple screens, and man, if you put them out in space on screens, I would love to see what Ken Walker can do. My last name here, and this is just kind of a little bit of a DFS play, just kind of finding a way to play Dak Prescott, maybe CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. I'm not sure how I want to play this. But I know that Tony Pollard right now in DFS is going to be the chalkiest pick. And for DFS tournaments, obviously, you want to be getting off that. Jerry Jones, just a couple hours ago, he said for Michael Gallup, he said, quote, "I expect to see more production. That's not any way of drawing a line. He's that important to our offense. We've seen those outstanding 20-plus yard plays. You bet we need to have him show up with the good stats." And I think that we could have it here. Obviously, Zeke Elliott is probably going to miss some time. Dalton Schultz has been limited. He's had like 3 separate knee injuries. It seems really bad for Dalton Schultz. Noah Brown hasn't practiced this week with a foot injury. That's kind of gone a little bit under the radar here. And Michael Gallup is just, all it takes is 1 or 2 passes downfield for him to rip off a huge play. We know the Cowboys are projected for top 5 points on the week. And if you have to get off the Tony Pollard stuff for DFS tournaments, if you're playing Battle Royale, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb plus Michael Gallup, I think would be a pretty good way to get off that. I just think that Michael Gallup, he hasn't been a full-time player yet, but he's off the injury report. And if Noah Brown's off the field, he's going to have to go into a full-time role.
No, I like that one. You know, because Gallup's another one of these guys, like, people are just like, well, What do I do? Drop him? Do I not? Yeah. You know, but you get a lot of those questions right now. But yeah, we're only one game with Dak back, and it was, you know, they kind of nursed him along. I think they were dead even, right? Their pass rate over expectation was 0%. Was it?
Yeah.
I think they were dead on. But that was better than what we had at Cooper Rush. So we're trending upwards, and the Lions just didn't fight back in that game. I'm curious. That game in particular is interesting to me because what the Bears did on Monday night is something that they should have been doing for another 5 weeks too. And we haven't seen that designed, you know, run game with Justin Fields. Yep. That was the first time they pulled that out. So I'm curious to see if they keep that going too, or if it was just a one-off thing.
Cause I would have to think they keep it, right?
Yeah, like, they should.
I mean, it's clearly effective. It's not shocking. I mean, if anyone's watched any Justin Fields at any point of his entire life, you know, it would work. I did notice even coming like into that game, his screened call rate, like last year, he was like one of the lowest in screen plays. It's like only like 6%. This year, it's like up at 18%. So we're getting the screen stuff and the quarterback design stuff. I think that even if this is, they're not going to like be averaging like 25 points per game.
Right.
But if they can just get up to 21 points per game, if they're just moving the ball at all, even if it's with the quarterback design stuff, I think that even like Darnell Mooney eventually can be at least like a deep flex play instead of like being outright droppable. The quarterback design stuff is clearly great for Justin Fields, but I think it's just an efficient play for what the Bears have been putting up the last two seasons. I hope that they just can keep these games a little bit tighter for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what we saw with like this Colts move to Sam Ehlinger. I mean, you look at kind of what the meta's been on defense this year, play shell coverage, you know, keep everything front, make teams have, you know, 8 play drives, 10 play drives, 12 play drives, make a mistake. And the quarterback run stuff is a huge element if you don't have starting weaponry. Look at these teams that are overachieving. The Bears are overachieving. The Falcons are overachieving. The Giants are overachieving. They've got these mobile quarterbacks. And yep. I think that's what the Colts really stared themselves in the face and thought something similar. Like we can't have a drop back passing game that has Matt Ryan dropping back 50 times behind this offensive line, yep. throwing 6-yard passes downfield. Like we just can't sustain drives that way. So having the QB mobility infused in, yeah, I think that's what the NFL is kind of moving to. These pocket passers are struggling, man. Hate to see it. You hate to see it because a lot of these guys have had great careers. Like, listen, man, Brady's walking straight in the Hall of Fame today. He walks out. Aaron Rodgers, the same thing too. But like, you don't have any QB mobility right now, and you pair them with like guys that struggle to like get open, like the Packers situation is.
Yeah,
it's really hard. It's really hard to sustain offense with the way teams are playing defense now. And the other component is like, everyone has like a demon that's just like a straight alien. It's like an edge rusher now. Like all these guys, like I was talking to my son about this. Like the best athletes I think in sports right now are these defensive ends and outside linebackers. Like these dudes are 6'5 to 6'7, 250 pounds. They run sideways. They're running horizontal at full speed.
Yeah.
Like these guys are absolute demons. Yeah. Like, and like every team has like two or three of these guys now. Yep. It's wild, but yeah, QB mobility, huge factor. And especially, you know, if you can use it on these teams like the Bears that really just don't have the playmakers. I mean, you gotta bang it, man. Use it.
It's so ridiculous that they weren't doing this. I'm super curious. You post like the NFL wide league trends after every single season. They're really fascinating. I do wonder if like the quarterback mobility stuff is not going to be great for like the depth of the fantasy wide receiver position. That's my like one kind of concern here. And I was looking at just some of the numbers, like how often players are in your flex if you're between running backs and wide receivers in best ball this year. And right now, like more so than ever, like the running back position's kind of been infiltrated instead of the wide receivers. And that's obviously partially because there's 24 running backs versus 36 wide receivers, so that flex position, you're like dealing with like the RB25 versus like the wide receiver 37, so it's a little bit easier. But in half PPR and stuff, it is kind of fascinating to see the top end pass, like Russell Wilson's fallen, Aaron Rodgers fallen, Tom Brady's fallen. Like that's a lot of passing yards that have kind of just gone away. So we'll see what the league wide trends are after the season.
Yeah, I'm very curious because we've seen that, well, at the start of the year, it looked like, oh my goodness, like if you don't have these elite wide receivers, like what are you going to do? And then there's been a huge punch back by the good running backs, at least since then. But running back receiving is still way down. Like that's the one element of like running backs. Like that's still way down. I posted something, it was after week 5, like the top, the first 5 weeks of the season, the last decade. And that was still just like getting nuked. And that's what I think like quarterback mobility has really had their imprint on, that, like their thumbprint, like
that's
really nuking a lot of the dump offs and stuff. Like they turn into QB runs, right? Like So I'm curious to see like if that sticks. But yeah, I love going back and looking at all that stuff every year and kind of just seeing the shift. And I've talked for two off seasons now, I've talked about at least coming to this one. I wrote about it in the Sharp Football book that just, you know, a lot of people were kind of just over propelling us playing through 2 years of the pandemic and underplaying what the pandemic had to do with offensive production. And I said, you know, I was like, you know, don't be shocked if like we see a big recoil this year, because, you know, we saw home field like from 2021 to 2020 take a huge shift when the team started to get fans. And then just like penalties and just players missed. I mean, you remember last December, we had like 1,000 guys on the COVID list. Like, you know, it was absolutely bonkers. So, I mean, I was trying to stress people like, you know, don't be shocked if we just see inherent recoil just because of the COVID stuff too, like playing through the pandemic. Like that stuff's not normal. We were seeing on offense for 2 years either. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just one thing. It's not just the two high safeties. It's not just, you know, the running quarterbacks. There's a lot that goes into what we've seen in this disappointment for in terms of scoring. But we're still here. We have to set fantasy lineups, and we're here every week in the context of fantasy football, right? Like whether a team score 30 points a week or they score 50 points a week, they're still going to be an RB1. They're still going to be a wide receiver one. They're still going to be a QB1. And we have to be on those picks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And for like best ball, like it's I post like the historical like data, but as like the league wide trends and stuff happen, like you can't just be like, oh, wide receivers historically have been really good in this part of the draft. And like, maybe those things kind of shift back and forth and stuff. And we're going to have to really like kind of get into the details of like, what's explaining some of these things. Is it just outlier performance? Is it COVID? Is it what's going on here? Is it just the quarterbacks? Is it the mobile quarterbacks? There's a bunch of stuff that we'll get through for the off season. But until then, we got about 9 more weeks of this. We'll be setting our rankings. You can find Lord Reeves at Sharp Football Focus. What do you got? Or Sharp Football Analysis, not Pro Football Focus. What do you got over there?
You know, I'm still doing the weekly worksheet. You know, I'm still doing that every week. I do a lot of DFS content over there too. We are week 8. We're doing a promo code SHARP50 this week. So 50% off everything on the site if you bump over there.
Very cool. All right. Josh will be back on Sunday morning. We'll have sit starts. We'll do all that fun stuff. Go play Battle Royale. Pick them. Use promo code the show to get on Underdog Fantasy. We'll match your deposit up to $100. I'm Hayden. Thanks for Reeves for jumping on. See you guys. Good luck.